Meeting will come to order. It's 7:31 p.m. Welcome to the November 25th, 2013 Glen Allen School District 41 regular meeting of the Board of Education. Mr. Kenwood, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Here.
Kenwood?
Here.
Mr.
Alger?
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Oliver?
Here.
Mr. Black? Here. Public participation. Is there anyone tonight that would wish to address the board? Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll move on. To recognition, P21 Exemplar Schools, Mrs. Carlson.
Hi. The Partnership for 21st Century Skills, known as P21, is a national organization that advocates for 21st century readiness for every student. And they have a 21st century learning exemplar program called Patterns of Innovation, which identifies, promotes, and celebrates examples of successful 21st century learning initiatives. This year, they identified 25 exemplars across the nation, of which Franklin School was one of them. They're trying to show what 21st century skills practices look like in action. The schools were selected from across the country, and they were evaluated by 21st century members and staff for educational excellence and successful 21st century learning implementation. We had a P21 team visit both the district and Franklin School last spring. It was the very end of May. They conducted interviews and did some observations over at Franklin School. They evaluated them on about six different criteria than that. And then last week, the work of the district and at Franklin School was identified and kind of showcased at their national summit in Virginia. And I had the privilege of sharing that information with them. And so there's some of the schools have podcasts, others they have videos in that, and ours is kind of a written case study in that. But we just wanted to kind of share kind of that good news for Franklin.
Great. Any questions or comments for Mrs. Carlson?
How does that get communicated within the P21 system, or and is that causing some of the interest in people coming to the district?
P21 posts everything on their site. You can view some of the podcasts, read the different interviews and that. And I know Kirk was sending that information out to his staff as well. Mm-hmm. I think that does kind of connect districts. Mm-hmm. I happen to be part of a panel. There were three high school districts and then us, so it was a little awkward to try to coordinate that conversation when they were kind of focusing more on initiatives at the high school and that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that helps, and we do have school district committees with us in early December and that. And part of it is just to learn the story and the journey and think about challenges and opportunities and things.
That's good.
There's an Illinois division of it as well, and so we can kind of stay connected through that as well.
Great. Thanks, Karen. Okay, moving on. Presentations, reports, and initiatives. CIT, Continuous Improvement Team, time of the day recommendations. Brian Bukowski is here to give us the report. Welcome, Brian.
Hi. Okay, Dr. Gordon and I are the co-chairs of the Continuous Improvement Team this year, and we've submitted a report, which you have. I'll give you just a little bit of background just to put it in perspective. Much of this many of you probably know, but during the past negotiations between the board and the Teachers Association, one of the topics discussed was whether or not to lengthen the instructional day and or teacher work day, and it was decided in negotiations that work on that issue would be given to the newly created Team 21, that the collective bargaining agreement established, because it fit in well with the type of work that team is meant to do. And there was for for this year a deadline of a report to be made on that issue by Team 21, which was in September of this year. The reason there were timelines and deadlines for reports to be presented and recommendations made is so if there was something that would be able to be put into place for the 2014-2015 school year, we kind of had to work backward in time to make sure that there was time to implement anything, any dramatic changes. Team 21 began their work in May and worked diligently throughout the summer. They met over 50 hours, I believe, through the course of the summer, working on the issue of time in the day and other things as well. By September, Team 21 was not at a place where they felt they could make a recommendation other than to request more time to continue looking into it. And at that point, CIT took the issue on, and we worked then, the continuous improvement team worked on it for two regular meetings and one all-day workshop meeting. And at the end of that, there was a very, very, very wide variety of opinions and beliefs in the room. And as far as the issue of lengthening the school day at all, either for teachers or students, there was no consensus reached by the continuous improvement team. And what you do have in the report that goes to the board and to the association from CIT is that as far as time in the day, the recommendations that came from Team 21 that CIT also was able to reach consensus around are two. One is that there's a recommendation that the district implement full-day kindergarten. Everyone's aware that may not happen imminently, but that both Team 21 and CIT felt that was an important enough vision and a direction that we would like to see the board go in. So that's a recommendation. The other is that in order to give more core instruction time in the elementaries to look into eliminating children being pulled out of their literacy and STEAM classes for whatever it might be, band, orchestra, other kinds of services, and actually a subgroup of CIT and some specialist teachers from the elementary district have worked on that. It's a pretty complicated topic, but work is being done along that way, and both Team 21 and CIT recommended that work continue.
That's perfect.
Great, Brian. Any questions, comments for Brian?
Thank you for the report.
You had a question?
Yeah, I do. I'm the second bullet point, are we saying take special services, band, and orchestra out of the school day and make it an after-school program?
Mm-hmm. No, not necessarily. No, it was just to try to, right now many children who receive those kinds of services or band lessons, whatever, they come out of the classes, and so they were trying to come up with, and it wasn't overly successful yet. Or I mean,
not yet. It is very complicated. So for our band and orchestra students in the fourth and fifth grade, they are pulled out generally in the neighborhood of 2 to 4 students at a time to get lessons instruction. So if you think about it, that a lot of students coming out at various points of the day to get this instruction, and that will either occur during their STEAM time. It really is dependent on how the school organizes it. So it'll either come out of a STEAM opportunity or the literacy point of the day. So we're trying to minimize the impact, the number of times students come out of core instruction. And we haven't. We haven't been able to solve this Rubik's Cube. It's very difficult. One of the issues, again, comes down to facilities. So where do you house all these students? And as the orchestra and band teachers have told us, I mean, sometimes we're in these small little rooms, these little areas to conduct this type of direct instruction. We're trying. We're meeting again. We'll continue to work on it. because we do think there is an impact on students. When you're out for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then come back into the classroom, I think it would be a stretch for any of us to really figure out what's been occurring and what needs to be occurring as I walk back into the classroom.
But my understanding of this program, a lot of energy, a lot of man hours, a lot of summer meetings.
Sorry, Patrick, which program?
The Team 21.
Team 21, CIT, this whole program. Have consistent that the elementary teachers, administrators, and consistently reported general students have not enough time for instruction, planning, and collaboration. You're coming back with a recommendation to say full day kindergarten and not sure what to do with band. Did we succeed?
Succeed in coming up with a solution?
Yeah. I mean, that was the whole idea, right?
Well, and as the board president, I'm also a member of CIT, and I think to conclude with succeed or not succeed, I don't know if that's the right way to say it. It's a process that was set up during the negotiations, and there were groups that need to have met to try to come up with some sort of some solutions or not. By specific dates set forth in the finalized contract between the board and GEA. Is it a question of success or failure? Not really. It's a question of can we come up with something through this process or not, I think is the better way of saying it.
So what I'm reading is not, because...
Well, it depends on what you...
Because...
Depends on where you're coming
from. The goal was to find a solution for not enough time for instruction, planning, and collaboration. And the recommendation is we need full day in kindergarten and look at band.
I guess the question I would ask is, and since we weren't on the committee, Brian, you could probably answer this best, but how is it that the committee felt that they met the objective of answering the question? Because obviously you guys spent time, you know, you came up with this. So I think what I heard is,
I mean, we didn't, because we could not reach agreement. We could not reach consensus.
So it was really the lack of consensus that where the committee said, okay, what I think I've heard you say is we need more time.
Where was the lack of consensus? Give us the detail then.
Pardon me?
Tell us what happened. Give us the detail. Why was there a lack of consensus? How differing were the opinions? Were they this close? Were they that far?
Well, I think the report showed that there was a group that thought more time was needed, another group that didn't think time was needed. There was research, and if I understand the research says that there is a case to be made for more time for teachers collaborating, which provides for better instruction. And then it seems like, based on the research, and tell us if this is right or wrong, but that there is...
I don't buy that.
Well, that's what the research says.
Yeah, well, okay, that's what the research says. But apparently, elementary teachers and administration reported not enough time for instruction, planning, and collaboration. Apparently, that isn't a hot enough topic to solve in 9 months. So, either...
Actually, the recommendations make that even worse, the objective.
Right, it makes it worse. So, either this isn't a priority for the group, or we need another group. Because...
Well,
if this isn't a priority, not enough time, we should have solved it with this 9-month effort. And I'm disappointed that the effort came back with we need full day kindergarten and look at band.
Can I weigh in real quick to follow up on what Sam said, because I'm the counterpart to Team 21 in terms of being the liaison for that. And you know, I take Brian at his word that there, and Sam actually talked about this at a couple board meetings ago, if not three, I think, about the conversation and you know, did a lot of work around Team 21's recommendation, which was a little bit broader, deeper, you know, came back with some direction setting. I would suggest that Team 21, and I'll do a report on our last meeting on the 14th of November, is in the midst of a ton of evaluation, which is their charge, which is our charge this year. And part of that, I think, will continue to tease out where do we end up on some of this time issue. Because part of the evaluation of the rollout of 21st Century Learning is around where are we seeing the need for either this instruction or collaboration, and what does that mean? So I don't see this conversation as ended. The contract required a deadline of response, and that's what we've been given. Now, we may not like that, but I personally don't think the conversation is over because of the work being done on the evaluation level. And what I'm reading is that CIT said there's not consensus on this piece. Frustrating. However, we do agree that there's a need to move forward on these two key pieces. And I would add, it's not just a band orchestra piece, but special services, mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong,
no, you were
Paul,
correct.
Is OT, PT, special needs, speech therapy, I mean, all
ELL.
Those things that at some school, ELL, at some schools, as I've heard in CIT last year, but you've heard that, Sam, but Team 21 this year, really creates a very complex schedule because some schools have many, many more students who get pulled, others fewer. You know, so that piece is a huge nut to crack and not without further conversation. So I can at least share with you from a Team 21 perspective, the work that Team 21 is doing is around the evaluation, and included in that is this continuing conversation around time and collaboration. And
well, can you guys clarify, because when I look at Team 21, right, Team 21 did look at, you know, in addition to that, they looked at aligning the Hadley time with the K-5 time, so that's 45 minutes. They looked at longer days for kids at risk. They looked at, you know, adding 15 minutes to science and 15 minutes to social. So you guys, as Team 21, mm-hmm. did look at those things, which mm-hmm. was the goal mm-hmm. of how do you use the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But somewhere in this process, I don't think Team 21, just tell me if we're interpreting this correctly. Team 21 said, here are the two things we agree with, the kindergarten and the you know, music and art. Here are the other things we talked about, mm-hmm. right? But Team 21 level, we couldn't get consensus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was a recommendation that was to go to CIT.
Which it did.
MOUSC, right? And then basically CIT couldn't come to consensus on that either. So
could not have come to consensus on what you said earlier.
Right.
Let me correct you. It's CIT that came back and said, here's the two pieces that we agree out of the recommendation. We need to continue further research and some of this pullout of core instruction, which seems, in a sentence, relatively easy and consequential, perhaps. But when you are in the conversation in the midst of that, really complex, especially based on our population levels at Churchill and the Lincoln and the kind of needs we have for those kids. So, yes, John, Team 21 came out with, I think, a fuller set of what-ifs, recommendations, but what we're hearing from Brian and he's telling us the truth is that CIT, and Sam was there, could not agree on some of those pieces.
As neither could Team 21.
Correct.
Right. But that there were recommendations around continuing study on those very things. Is it aligning the beginning, you know, the starting time? Because embedded in that also, when we talked about this, was transportation changes and costs, those pieces. So there has to be some more conversation. And maybe the reality check is that we were being overly optimistic about being able to meet the deadline. And
For better or worse, the deadlines are what they are. This mm-hmm. is another step in the process. This recommendation is not given to us as a board, and now we need to have a conversation about it as well. I would suggest that conversation should not take place this evening, and would ask if specifically to Brian, is there anything else that he can lend us from the report, the recommendation from CIT?
I have a specific question, just so I can understand the magnitude of what you're all talking about on pullouts. Can I have absolute numbers? I mean, is it 200 kids at Lincoln, 400 kids at Churchill?
Yeah, we can give you that.
I mean, to me, these words don't mean much because I don't understand the magnitude.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's 20 at each school, I don't think it's a big
problem.
But the
magnitude, my understanding is the magnitude is there is a census that there's not enough time in the day for instruction planning or collaboration. And it was enough that we as a community wanted to bring administrative board members and teachers in a room because it was such a high priority that we wanted to put an aggressive look into this.
And I would also add that because of some of the changes in curriculum, such as foreign language and other things, that even more time might be needed.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's what you said, plus more.
I'm just
okay.
I'm flabbergasted that this is what I, to use the term, that this is what we came with. And two things come back to me. It's really not that important, and there is enough time, or it's not that high of a priority. So, as an, I mean, to use business terms, as an executive, what type of message do we want to send to our ministers on our side of the table to say, look into this more?
Mm-hmm.
Because you had 9 months to look into this, and we couldn't get consensus except full-day kindergarten and look at band.
And, Patrick, I would tend to agree with a lot of that, but I would, again, remind us that that's a conversation that we need to have, and that I don't think that CIT is, or this forum, actually, is appropriate at this point. So,
okay.
Having said that, I would like to thank Brian and CIT for their work, and obviously the board will take the report under advisement for further action. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay, moving on. Now, phase two, elementary classroom utilization.
Bob and Ron will be giving us a presentation. We'll start first with the phase one, space utilization. How does that look with the recommendation that's on the table, the administrative recommendation that's on the table for the additional classrooms at each of the elementaries? And then we'll move into a phase two space utilization recommendation. How do phase one and phase two work together? How do those pieces, and where do students sit within our district, and how does this work? So I'll hand it over to these two gentlemen. They'll walk through, and they'll kind of tag team this conversation as we go through it. Gentlemen.
So,
you guys want to go up there?
I'm going to get over there, I think.
Eventually, or is that going to be
eventually?
It's a slow trip.
It is.
It's a scary board.
I've been here before. So, as you know, we have brought you a recommendation that essentially is phase one, which has a number of proposed additions to our elementary schools. What we've brought you and you'll be acting on over the next several months will be our view of phase one, and that will be a minimum of four classrooms in each one of our elementary schools for a total of 16 classrooms, which will lead to a partial reduction in our reliance upon affordable. So we wanted to create for you an agenda in terms of what the expectations are and what you'll see this evening. So I'm not going to read that from you. You should have it in front of you. Or actually, I don't think you do.
We don't have it in front of
you.
We
don't. You don't have it in front of you.
Can anyone email it to us?
We will.
So we can look
so,
at it.
And again,
yeah, you will.
We're here to present this evening. You know, if you have any questions or concerns or anything else, you can just get back to myself or Paul, and we'll be happy to respond to you accordingly.
Can I make one more general statement for this update? That it doesn't really address anything in Hadley. I don't know if that was clear, but Hadley is going to be another detailed process, and we'll be moving on Hadley after your workshop in January.
So that's the proposed plan. Here is the overview of the agenda. And so phase one, what we're looking at is how current programs fit into the additions of the elementary schools once the additions have been completed. It's meant to look at the long-term usefulness of these proposed additions and doesn't preclude us from making any additional changes to those plans or continuing to do internal work. We've talked about work at Lincoln. We've talked about work at Churchill in terms of providing a little better transitional space and so forth for those kids. Phase two, here we'll describe additional work at Lincoln, Forest Glen, Churchill, and Ben Franklin.
to give you a possible flavor of what that could look like. This is really, and I'll be going through phase two with you, by the way. You know, the phase two effort really folds into the mix here, a lot of the previous planning that we did. I picked up where we left off back in April. I also integrated some work that we had done in 2011 from the Spalding site, and then fused that together with current space usage data. So that's how we came up with this particular concept. And really, it is a starting point. It's a placeholder. You know, once we get into the program, building programs, and after your workshop in January, we come back to this and revisit this. So. Okay. You know, on many occasions, you know, the board has asked questions about site capacities. And so what I thought I would do is bring forward some data that actually is in a lot of your books. It's buried deep in your big 11 by 17 binders, but this is kind of a little bit updated. And just to hammer home a comparative study that we did for phase one and then the proposed phase two building site. So if you look at each building, we currently have, you know, almost, you know, on average about 600 per site on the elementary schools and then 1238. There are state guidelines from the state of Illinois that suggest certain site sizes. They use that for the Capital Development Board program, but they're recommendations. It's not a given, but that's kind of a benchmark that we compare districts to districts. And using the ISBE standards, you're about 50%, the Lincoln site is about 50% of what it should be in the eyes of the state of Illinois. Churchill is about 72% based on the capacity of and the size of the existing site. Franklin is about 73%, Forest Glen about 43%, and Hadley is about 41%.
All right, Ron, so I'm kind of slow. Lincoln has 600 kids. That says that the Lincoln physical space should be twice as big as it is right
correct.
Now?
Correct. The site itself.
That is correct.
For 600 kids?
That's what that site would support.
But that meaning site acres, not square footage.
Yes, that's correct.
22
acres. Right. So do you have this by square footage, or is that the next thing?
You know, the state doesn't look at it that way.
But so the state does have a recommendation saying each class of X should be
sure
X square foot.
That's right. That's right. But they're not linked.
Did you look at your data in urban areas, or is this, does the state do segregated like that?
Not necessarily, no. It's a single, it's one size fits all.
Yeah, okay.
As usual. But you hit on something. I mean, you are approaching the urban densities that you do see, you know, maybe West Cook or Chicago with these sorts of site loadings. Okay, so again, just as a comparison, we can come back to this. If you go to the next slide, you'll see the proposed test fits where we had 450 students at Lincoln, Franklin, and Forest Glen. We permanently housed 600 kids at Churchill, and you can see that we went down at each site, although we actually increased our capacity at Hadley. You can see that was one of the things that was driving the recommendations that came out of the previous master planning efforts, is we're trying to reduce that density of each site to open up more green space. So this really hammers that home.
Can I ask, you know, Spalding, yes. You have is 600 in acreage. It's, you know, one of the smaller sites. So
absolutely.
Is that because, you know, different ability to go two stories? Or, I mean, is there a reason why I would have thought Spalding would be...
Well, that kind of rolls into what Joe was saying, you know, with site density. Everything at Spalding is we're proposing two levels.
Yeah, okay. So it's because of the two levels that you could do that.
And I would also add, there's early childhood, which would be morning and afternoon, so we're counting those students. So that's an important piece to put in there, is that pre-K early childhood center adds to those numbers overall, but on a daily basis, optimal space. I mean, you're still going to be in that 450, 500 range, but we're counting both students, the morning session and the afternoon session, just to make sure that we're...
This is just a little, you know, remember we have that the park piece that's north of that, too, that mm-hmm. kind of, you know, as a practical matter, that kind of skews your numbers. You know, you may
you
have actually
that
500.
You're not counting in the park.
That's correct. You don't own that. But it is usable park.
It's roughly 2 acres, right? So
2.7, I believe.
Ron, a quick question. When I went back and pulled out our March 2009 the master facility plan, that was the role that John had for the board with Bob Solak as a board members. And under concept B, which was this Spalding, which mm-hmm. we're talking about, it says, provides relief to existing elementary schools by reducing enrollment except for Churchill. So
you're right on the money.
Keeping
That's right.
us here.
Right. That's right. You're exactly right.
All right, I just want to make sure I'm seeing that correctly, no. that this hasn't changed from them.
Correct.
Well, Churchill's going down 60 students.
Right.
But,
well, I mean, it's...
It also has the potential with the demographic that we, with the locations that we draw from in terms of boundaries for Churchill, to have that number still be in sway because of mobility that's... apartment housing mostly, mm-hmm. or a lot of it is.
Well, I mean, this is a stake in the ground to show us how you got to where you
exactly correct. Right.
Correct.
To show some of the rationale. And these are all approximate building areas to the pink bar right here, because it, we're in phase two. You may be, for instance, making the cafeteria larger over four. And there are things that we have to review. You may or may not do that. So this is kind of a middle of the road estimate, to get you moving forward.
That square footage includes phase one.
Yes, that's correct.
And does it count the portable spaces that are remaining as square footage too?
No, it's a before and an after snapshot. If you go back to the previous slide, we've accounted for the 32 mobiles. You can see that area data. But it's all zeroed out in this model.
So we want to give you some information that you've already seen. We want to identify clearly for you what phase one is going to look like. This is Churchill for phase one. You notice on the northeast end of that property is where we're proposing to put that with almost a five classroom addition and some additional restrooms. I'm just going to walk through these various floor plans. You've seen Forest Glen. We're going to go on the west side of that building there and put in four classrooms. We have Franklin, as you know, that's proposed for the west side of the property, and again, that has four classrooms. And there's the Franklin, that's the second floor area.
So that second floor area, we're not doing anything with, right?
We don't have any intention of touching that in phase one.
Okay.
And this is based on recent data we just obtained from the principals.
That's correct.
We last worked with, Gary and Lori. So this is based on very current space usage, having these buildings be used, having the additional.
And then this is the Lincoln site. As you notice, there's been a couple of moves here. This is the proposed four classroom additions on the west end of Lincoln. And then what we would have to do is, obviously, those two portables that are there now, they are no longer being used. Those are going to be taken out. Whether it's this spring or next summer, those will be removed. And then we'll bring the four classrooms, the four portable classrooms that are currently on the west end of that building, down into the site where the current two classrooms are at.
Okay, and I basically have already covered this information. The phase two plans were really based on what we've done in the past, and that information was brought forward. There are a handful of key issues that we need to talk about, such as two and three periods of lunch, office reconfiguration. I'll go through each one of those with you per site. Yeah. All right. This is also a building capacity model. I thought it was useful to give you a snapshot of how district-wide, each building is being used, and possible capacity targets. Again, this will be contingent on you working through your long-range planning process, but what this does is, the long-range plan would create a 600-student school in Churchill, 450 at Forest Glen, Franklin, and Lincoln, and then the fifth elementary would house really a three-section, 450-student school, but I think Bob mentioned that before, I think. We were moving ECSE half-day and full-day programs to the new site, and then possible pre-K half-day three classrooms, which would be six sections.
So we currently have the EC, the early childhood pre-K programs at Forest Glen and at Churchill. So to reduce those numbers, to get those more to the optimum level for that site, we'd be moving those programs over to the proposed Spalding site.
But what you're about to show us here, phase two, includes full-day kindergarten, or assumes full-day kindergarten.
That's correct. Right. Each building is
and
right.
Roughly that adds up to eight additional classrooms across the K through fives.
Two, yeah.
Well,
because there are three sections, it's a full classroom for half the capacity. So it's you know, that kind of skews the number of you'll have to put a full classroom in for half the class. So
I could kind of pause the conversation here because we're starting to go into pause two, and I'm kind of holding my thoughts on phase two because I know we haven't started these conversations, but now we are, and I want to bring some thoughts to this. Phase two is talking about full-day kindergarten and those priorities. We're starting to set priorities here. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just me, but I don't know if we agreed what those priorities are. What if we don't do full-day kindergarten and we bring all of our case management students in? Does it change our number? Do we, all of our special services programs and you put them in one building, does it change our number?
It wouldn't only be your student numbers, it would significantly affect your building. So
exactly.
The facility itself can accommodate those.
Exactly.
But within our plan, we have space for three additional programming that we would bring in from the case and possibly another. And as we look at it, we have 20 students who are outsourced within our case cooperative who are working with other school districts because of this limited space. One of the most impactful programs that we have in other districts is our autism or structured learning environments. We are looking to that we would bring two to three of those classrooms back, a high and a low back in, which ultimately we'd save significant money. But within this plan, we have rooms available for those and that we believe we could bring in a majority. There are going to be certain situations where we don't have the staff expertise to be able to handle it, but we believe we could bring in a majority of those 20 students into our district within this plan.
And one of the things I think I learned, and it was the same forum that Joe was in, is, and I'm starting again, if we're going to be talking about phase two, I'm going to start laying some of this groundwork out here, is that if we're going to go for referendum, and we don't know if we are, but if we're going to go for referendum in phase two, we need to have community, but we're going to need our own community lobbyists to carry that banner for us. And we're going down a path of, and maybe the something that I learned this weekend was, you know, as a board member, once you vote for a referendum, that's all you can do after that. You just have to state facts and that's it. I mean, there's, and then you need those community members to sell that bond issue.
Correct. You have to have a parent organization.
Volunteers, knocking on doors, kissing babies every day.
That's why we believe, if we were to do that, that we would be looking further down the road because you need to
right.
spend time.
Right. But we're, again, I held off as much as I could, but I think we need to start having those conversations now. Is full day kindergarten a program where we have people that are signed on the dotted line that says, I will go knock on doors for you, District 41, for that referendum that we need full-day kindergarten to build buildings? Or do we have more people or other people that says, I will do full-day kindergarten if you make it a something else?
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, and that goes to the conversation that, you know, I know I brought up last time, is that we need to set the priorities, right? Our phase one was really how do you spend this money reserves to get the best bang for the buck.
Right.
Now we need to sit down and say, what's the priority? Because otherwise, phase two could look very different.
Right. And that's what the January workshop is intended to do, where we'll spend a number of hours together in an open session to have that conversation like we did July.
July.
Yeah.
Right.
So we will set that in the next 2 weeks. Maureen and I will work on that to set that time.
Okay. But at this point, so I agree with you. Got to see this property so we know what this thing is. But I think these guys have at least addressed, and I'm assuming...
A scenario.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And a scenario that could be likely, because we've talked about it, which is maybe full-day kindergarten, and maybe bringing in some of the, you know, some of the special ed back.
Yeah, I just... Mm-hmm. It's just for the record, then. I want there to be an understanding that we're not going down this path, because I haven't committed to this path yet.
This is just an administrative
thinking
that we needed to put in front of you to see how phase one and phase two could possibly work together. But we know phase two is very conceptual in nature.
Right.
But I think it was important to say we own, the only thing that we own in our district is that one site. So we really thought about it, and there's been a lot of work done in previous years on the Spalding site and what it would fit and what it would do. So bringing back some of that work that previous boards have done to start laying it out and so that the board does see how that phase one is an important phase.
Right.
Even though it takes care of a number of the portables, it's still important in the long run to be able to accomplish other initiatives.
So this scenario, if Spalding is not an option,
mm-hmm.
and we go pre-K, we're adding two more portables on every site. It's a whole different approach.
I think what Ron stated in his presentation is that this is a place where there's many different scenarios, but this is to give us an understanding of one scenario so then we can start digesting it so at our workshop.
Well, we have to have a starting point, and you bring up a really good point, and that is that to go, I mean, we've had a lot of people in conversations, folks are listening to the board meetings, we've had a lot of, good or bad, I thought it was good, feedback on a really bold decision, and that was to look for property. But that caused, to me, a little bit of a groundswell or a shift in recognizing the need to move. I just want to give you a statistic here, because when I got this for the board meeting, I went back to kind of the history that is on the website of facilities and boundaries, referendum, et cetera. And in 1996, that particular district facilities committee at the time recommended renovations and additions to all schools. And we blew up on portables in 2000 and, we started, but we really blew up in 2006. So there was this, huge shift, you know, recognizing we had to do something in order to get kids under a roof, whatever that roof was going to look like. For me, this, we have as a board to have our direction. We are going to bid on the additions, and it's not without years of precedent that, in fact, committees and boards before us all said, you got to add on. And it gives us a starting point to then have the conversation with the public to say, this is, we're restricted. We have Spalding. We have a little bitty land piece of detention by a Main Street school. We have our buildings. And even at that, and I thought this was interesting, in 2002, a boundary change was finally approved to relieve overcrowding at Forest Glen. And how many kids it relocated? 30. Two subsequent boundary conversations don't change anything. So there are some parameters that historically are built into the conversation. So I'm with what you're saying, which is we've got to have a space to say, and so we're looking at this, and what if, and then get that feedback in order to know what to do next.
Since you introduced the topic of looking back, do we have any data when we looked at this originally what this was going to cost?
Oh, yeah.
We do.
We found the 1997 boards for this.
So does anybody know what we said it was going to cost then versus now that we've waited all this time?
Well, that included even a presentation on an addition in Hadley, and it was under $12 million.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at $12 million just to do the elementary school without affecting Hadley at all.
So you have to be careful when you're comparing things because it's not quite the same.
It's not the same. You're right.
Package.
It is, yeah.
But it still had proposed additions for the elementary level, but something rather significant ahead.
But maybe what you're saying is some of the inaction
that's
at
exactly
the time
what I'm saying. Yeah.
May have caused this board and other boards to figure out how to
spend.
The
nature of the turnover
it absolutely
every 2 years, too, because
right.
You are reflecting back and doing what we're doing, which is due diligence around where are we, where do we need to move. But even back to the 2009 Master Facility Plan, this concept A about adapting existing schools is everything that we're looking at now, but for one. It's bring all children into the main building, boundaries and school populations remain, improvement should be equitable among the schools, avoid costs associated with operating a new school. So we're looking to change that. In some cases, this concept calls for rebuilding the most obsolete sections. Can we look at two-story additions and buildings remain large, still in proportion to their size? That's not going to change. We have what we have.
Well, I mean, it sounds like we're having our facilities workshop tonight. But
I just want to get on the record because these conversations tend to be in fits and starts. We have this every two-week kind of review, but it's a longitudinal conversation. And each piece helps us see the need to, to do that next thing. Big part being the facilities workshop and the community conversation. But I hear what you're saying, Sam.
And the answer, Patrick, is that yes, we as a board need to make these decisions, and I'm assuming that we'll go a long way to make those decisions in the workshop in January. But 2 pages back in this presentation, phase two plan shown here is meant to provide the Board of Ed food for thought as we prepare for the facilities. There's the workshop. And I think this is a lot of, obviously it's a lot of food, John.
Yes,
so
right.
if we could allow these two gentlemen to continue with their presentation.
Right. So we just wanted to roll through and Jeff, give you some idea of what phase two may look like.
So some of the decisions here that need to be made are the office area. If you recall back in April, we proposed that the office area be relocated off close to the parking lot, so we'll have to study that. We had talked about increasing the size of the cafeteria. We can revisit that. But for the most part, a single level classroom wing over here would get you the needed capacity, because if you recall, we talked about a two-story wing over there. But we also talked about that perhaps in the context of removing the diamond. But from a financial standpoint, that's not going to happen. And that was done to give you more surface parking and better drop-off and circulation. But again, this picks up where we left off. We're trying to repurpose existing classrooms and do as little as possible to get you back into school. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the fundamental concept here.
And I'm sorry, but what do we call those spaces? Integrated spaces?
Integrated resources.
Yeah. This is with or without integrated.
This doesn't have, we didn't embed those in each one of the classroom clusters. We were trying to salvage as much of the existing
footprint. So this is more or less the straight 900 square
foot. It is, but we do have the different pieces are accounted for in other locations. They're just not clustered together in that team teaching mode.
And I'm not sure if I heard you correctly, but is there any other infrastructure changes for phase two at Churchill outside of the ones we did in phase one?
Well, this is approximately where that stormwater detention area is.
Yeah, not water, but gyms, bathrooms, physical therapy spaces, all of this.
In phase two here, restructuring the offices.
Yeah, how much would we be going back and redoing in the existing building? Is that your question?
Yeah, the idea was that, there's an infrastructure issue that we need to deal with. Mm-hmm. And is that a part of phase two, or because we're doing Spalding under this scenario, the infrastructure issues kind of go away?
That will be on the table after your January workshop, and then that will be studied. So what are those priorities?
Okay, so it assumes no integrated resources, then, I should just say.
Correct. There are support spaces, but not in that fashion.
But in Churchill, you're putting them in the phase one. You're putting bathrooms.
Correct, yes, absolutely.
So that's one difference in the church.
Mm-hmm. And one other comment, too, before we can go back one. We're considering relocating the boiler room. There's a note there, so just so we don't lose that on the radar, because the boiler room currently is buried in here, and by creating this access path to create a circuit, we're going to be sealing off that boiler room, so we talked about relocating that in the back view. So there's probably going to be a basement component under here, just for your information. Mm-hmm. All right, so here's Forest Glen. similar issues. You know, we had talked originally about perhaps making the office or larger to consolidate all functions into that office, so that would be something to review in February. We were giving you additional cafeteria space in order to give you that 2 month period only. So that was proposed. You have to do that? You'll have to weigh that against schedule and priorities. But for the most part, we talked about a remodeling project in the library, but for the most part, it's intact. There's not a lot of things to modifications here. Franklin Phase 2, even fewer modifications proposed here. We may come back and look at some improvements to the cafeteria space in the stage to make it more usable. But for the most part, we're not coming back to Franklin making a lot of Phase 2 modifications, unless it's an infrastructure piece, roofing or what have you.
Lincoln is where you're in Phase 2 is where you see significant changes to the existing interior of the building.
Right.
Mind you can walk
right
through those?
Right, right. This still reflects that. This reflects the reconfiguration of that center core. And we also have outlined a second link to create a circulation loop here too for the building. So that needs to be studied. And the cafeteria expansion is a reaction to additional fewer lunch periods. So if you need to do that, you'll have to reevaluate that again. And could you ultimately live with what's there? We can study that too. One thing that isn't really reflected in this, and it's an important disclaimer, is the traffic and circulation studies. You know, we're right-sizing to reduce capacities, but there's this need to maybe go back to that, whether you have 450 or 600, and that's another piece that you may want to pick up in the spring to look at different drop-off configurations, especially with Lincoln and Forest Line. All right, so here is the Spalding update, and here's the 2.15 acres over here. But don't be deceived, because you know that includes trees and the swale and everything else. So maybe an acre of usable property over here that the school can access. And this happens to be option D2. D1 had your playgrounds on site. So these are currently playgrounds. You know, we would hope that you could work out an agreement to upgrade those and use those again. But this reflects everything that you saw in that overall occupancy number tested. We've got kindergarten and pre-K, and early childhood and first grade, and pretty much all on this lower level. Media center, art, music, mini office. And if you go to the second level, it's primarily your L1 and L2 levels. We also have math labs and ABC. So very simple concept. It's actually laid out too, so that if in the future you decided to throttle back and pass it here, you can build maybe two of the three wings. We build the core space now. So there are lots of variables, lots of pieces that you can engage in that long-range planning effort.
Did you just build on the north side of the lot just to take advantage of the 2.5 acres? Is that what drove that?
Yes. If you go back to that, Mike, this what we were doing is that this would be a bus drop-off, for before and after school and maybe noon, and then it's sealed off and then it becomes a play area. So it's a dual-purpose area, and it bridges the hard, the soft playground and the hard surface. So it's a dual-purpose. That's what you have with these sorts of sites. And then this would be surface parking over here, ample surface parking for staff, and then a parent drop-off over here, queuing up, and additional buses to queue up over here.
So this is the 70,000 square feet, 72,000.
Correct, plus or minus. We did increase the footprint slightly to add some practice spaces for the band and orchestra, but that's negligible.
And again, this is 1,500 square feet.
It would be 450 for the core school, and then it has the other pieces layered on top of that. The BCSE and then pre-K are layered on top of that. So it's primarily a three-section school.
So that's our presentation for this evening on Phase 1 and Phase 2. As I understand it, you're going to be in a workshop sometime in January. If you have any additional questions, we'd be happy to entertain them now, or you're more than welcome to email or give us a call, give me a call, and we can get anything that you might need answered taken care of for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Discussion items. The 2013 proposed property tax levy. We'll give Bob a minute to
recount.
Well, I guess this is up for a discussion item, so that you guys, the board members, can prepare it. At the next board meeting, we'll be looking for adoption. You have seen the recommendation that we put forth. We are prepared to post our public notices and so forth in the next few days. So really, this is an opportunity for the board to decide and discuss the proposed levy recommendation that you had presented to you previously.
Any questions or comments?
Bob, we're seeing some of these numbers come back from the county.
Yeah, I should make a comment on that. I had gone back to the assessors, both of our assessors, the primary one of which is Milton Township, and they finally did get back to me last Friday afternoon, Thursday or Friday afternoon. And in my original proposal, I indicated that the EAV values were to decrease in excess of 6%. They've come back with a revised projection, and that they are due to decrease by an estimated 4.1%. New construction is above the $10 million we had put in our original proposal, so it's up to $11.3 million. And that's the information that they sent out as of late last week.
And does it adjust our recommendation?
No, it just provides a little greater. I said that the original recommendation was going to come in about 2.43%. I was asking for up to 4.5% for a cushion. My adjusted numbers now come back at a request that we could expect of about 2.7% overall.
Bob, what's the possibility that between now and it's March that the assessor then gives us our number, right?
I have seen these numbers change dramatically between now and by the time I get the final numbers back. Mm-hmm. We typically find it the last week of March, spring break of next year.
So what's the risk involved? I mean, it's hard to answer that, but planning for that.
Well,
we know that some of these figures in new construction and...
That's why I've come back with a requested recommendation of 4.5%. That should allow for the differences in any material differences in what the recommendation is and what we ultimately respect and receive. Remember, we are under a property tax cap district, right. Property tax cap county, and the district can only receive either what we ask for or whatever the assessor, that calculation that the assessor generates in terms of what is allowed under PTEL.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, comments for Bob?
It's my same one, and I'm probably more tied to this because it was a big thing for me when I started on the board where we would ask for 20%, 15%, and we were only getting 8 or 7, so I thought... At that time, we had started a campaign to tighten that gap. I know 4.5% is, maybe viewed as not a lot, but I don't know if these assumptions could change that much that we wouldn't just keep it at 3.5%. That's where I struggle. That's where I've always struggled.
John, I've heard it for as long as I've been with the with the district, and I appreciate your concerns, and I think we've made significant reductions. Although it is double what we're asking for, the difference of where it was at 8 or 10 years ago is the district was expecting 9 or 10%, and they were asking for an excess of 20%.
Yeah, this is the first time we've gone back to doubling, but over those years we haven't. We haven't put that way.
Right, and I would expect that gap to narrow between the levy request and what it actually comes back at.
Well, this is semantics, and I'll admit to that, but when you say double, the perception I get is this kind of 100% mark. What you're saying is that with some of these adjustments or these numbers, that adding that 2% allows us to avoid, and I'm, you know, I'm going back to this plan that you gave us that shows us if we held the levy flat, if we have our projected at what it should be, where we might end up. And I just again go back to the quirkiness of the state law, having to do this now and not knowing those real figures. So it's always a little bit of an estimate and crapshoot. And I agree with John. It was my first board that worked really hard through finance, working with you, Bob, when you first started, to say we have got to get closer. And I concur with what you said. I think we have done that. But it always makes me nervous to know that there's going to be some shift potentially come March, and then essentially we're told this is what you got.
I know there was a time a couple of years ago when those projections were so close that there was only, I believe, around $20,000 or $40,000 that separated
right. What
we originally asked for come November, December, what we ultimately received. That's a little too close for comfort from my perception.
I mean, it's a good thing because what it says is that the district is working really hard to levy for what those projected needs are, and that's important. We need that. To me, is certainly our fiduciary responsibility.
Well,
but you've also showed us on these numbers that our surplus would be only around $36,000.
Given next year and the proposed additions that we're making a recommendation over the next couple of months, because we've committed to spending or increasing our expenditures for, which would essentially be professional services, purchase services, we would be funding those on an ongoing basis instead of trying to fund them over the life of the bond or whatever that case may be.
Thank you.
I would agree that we have done a great job in making that number tighter, and we've done a great job of trying to budget out further, you know, to make sure that we're understanding those numbers. But this one is 88% more. You know, it's not 100%, but it's 88%, and that's just always bothering me. So.
Ken, I think you know that it bothered me too when I first got here. We've worked very hard over the past several years to narrow that number. And I understand what you're saying, the difference between 2.7 and 4.57.
It's 80% of the
same. I think it's...
But I can't get hung up on that number. I'm sorry. I got to say something.
On what number?
It's a smaller number.
Significant.
Yeah, I mean, the math in me tells me 88% of a bigger number has more magnitude, more wide range than when you're that close on a smaller absolute number.
Well,
so
then
the impact
you,
of 10,
you can take, you
but
can
when
take
you have 10% increase and you're asking for 20, that's 100% more than you need. But that's a huge number.
But it's 10%.
It's 10%.
Yeah.
Of the number you're asking, versus 2% or 2.5%, versus 4.7%, which is 88%. So
you
don't want to get hung up on that, on the percentage being 88%.
Again, that's
because it's a smaller absolute number.
It's a smaller absolute.
So what's the absolute number difference from way back then? 400,000 to 1,000,007.
Oh, there was a.
That's the
I don't know. I didn't do the levy, but it was millions.
Right, well,
of
that's
dollars.
The important number divided upon how many households.
Well, you know, you guys, you always talk about communication, right? So,
right. That's
why what's going to go in the paper.
And that's why this is
what's
important.
What's going to go in the paper is the
4.5%.
That's why.
Whoa, one at a time, please.
I believe my point's important because you're actually clarifying the absolute number difference between the history.
It's not the way the paperwork gets filed.
Well.
And I don't understand.
Bob, is it fair that the reason we're having this discussion is because of the inexactness of the way the system is set up? Because the levy process is in December and the budget process is the following, eight months later?
And everything's an estimate at this time. I don't have hard numbers. I had explained earlier that I've been speaking to the townships. I start my conversations really in July. And here I get numbers just this past late week in terms of what their estimates are. And my bet is, I know a couple of years ago, they told me to use $10 million for a new construction, and it came in at something 30% less, $7 million. So for their estimates to me are just guesswork at this time also.
Well, I guess my point was you could double the new construction and still get under the 3.5%.
But I would still, the number that I would bring you for a recommendation would still be 4.5 or whatever that number is.
Okay, any other questions? Comments? Thanks, Bob. Don't go anywhere, though, because
you're up again.
The next item is contract extension for electric services with Integres Energy Services.
So I brought you a recommendation. Actually, we came to the Finance Committee a couple of weeks ago, and we have gone out. I've spoken to a representative from Integres. They have they actually are going to save us. The original proposal was for savings of about $4,500 a year off of this year's current rate. Spoke to them again today. Documents are in the packet for signature. They came back with even a further reduction, an estimated $4,000 again. So we would like to lock in our usage for next year. Our intentions are next year we would start to go out to bid probably September, October for a mid-December electric service bidding process.
And
this agreement will take us through about the end of December.
We're going to take action on this topic later in the meeting as well, so we can see any discussion or questions at that time.
That's my request. Okay. We approve it this evening.
Okay.
I'm ready now.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Action items. Consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, we have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, which include the Human Resources Personnel Report, including employment recommendations, resignations, and dismissal. That's the blue paper, the updated version that we have in front of us this evening. The Finance Facilities and Operations Reports, which includes the Treasury Report, Investment Schedule, Monthly Revenue Expenditure Summary Report, the Summary of Bills and Payroll, the School District Payment Order, Vandalism Damage Report, Disposal of Surplus Property Report, the 2013-2014 FOIA Report, 2013 Report on Shared Services or Outsourcing, and other matters, including approval of the board meeting minutes of the November 11, 2013 Board of Education regular meeting and the November 11, 2013 Board of Education regular meeting closed session. I have a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion. Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Roll call, please.
Mr. Tamwood?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Kuczynski?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. Superintendent's recommendations. Back to the contract extension for electric services. Earlier this evening, actually moments ago, we heard from Bob. So any questions, comments? May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented earlier?
Motion.
Second.
I didn't hear the motion. Mr. Pachetsky?
Yes.
And Mrs. Nelson? Okay, any discussion? All right. Yeah. Roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Elcher?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Pachetsky?
Yes.
Mr. Bender?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Superintendent's report.
I have two brief things. At the previous board meeting, we heard a community member talk about how he was so disappointed that our schools were open during Veterans Day. I did not solicit this letter. It came to me from a veteran, and he wrote to the Lincoln School students. Each year, we honor the men and women of the United States who joined with others to defend and protect our homeland. These individuals do so with the intent that our families and friends will remain safe from conflict and war. They know when they're leaving home that their service may take them to faraway places and many times place them in dangerous situations that may lead to injury or loss of life. Whether they are in the air, at sea, or on the ground, the armed and uniformed services are there for our protection. All the branches, Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Marines, in the United States, human services require extensive training and sacrifice. Yesterday, November 11th, Veterans Day, was an example of why individuals serve their country. You students, the future of Glen Ellyn and our country, exemplified the reason for each member, veteran, to serve and protect. Your students and your teachers gave each of us a memory we will never forget. Thank you for the honor you bestowed upon us. The work in Glen Ellyn, I don't know what other districts do on Veterans Day, but I was absolutely blown away at what this district does to honor the veterans. Our students know why they celebrate this day. As I was sitting in the audience at Lincoln and hearing from these men and women who gave service to their country, and when one gentleman stepped forward and said, "This is the first time I have ever been honored for my service," it literally brought tears to the members of the board and myself who were sitting there. It still gives me goosebumps to know our faculty, our parents, our community, our students, and these notes our students wrote, and they got up. I mean, Lincoln, and I'm sure at every school, was so impressive because I had the opportunity to hear from, but I was at Lincoln. Our students were talking about what the meaning of Veterans Day. I had never seen that. 23 years in education, I had never seen students speak in the manner in which they did. They were eloquent, they were thoughtful, and they cared so much. And they brought in their grandfather, and they introduced him. It was one of the sweetest things I think I've seen in a long, long time. And to see the pride in these men and women who so proudly served our country and would do it again at a drop of a hat. I wish people would ask questions before telling others what true patriotism is. What I saw was an absolutely remarkable event who honored our men and women. And more importantly, our students know what, they absolutely know what Veterans Day is about. I would say probably a little bit more than staying home and watching TV and maybe the other activities they could participate in. Because it was a school-wide event, and it was at Hadley, Franklin, Forest Glen. It was at every one of our schools. Each and every one of our communities took an opportunity to say thank you. I wish people would ask questions as opposed to throwing stones. We do great things in this district. Are we always perfect? No. Do we stub our toe? Yes. But do we pick ourselves up and do the best we can? Yes. But on many occasions, we make a difference. We make a difference in people's lives, and we did that day. And when that gentleman stood forward and he said, "Thank you for recognizing me," I'll take that any day of the week. So that's one. The second one, much less passion. This is a requirement that I have to fulfill for the state by December 1st of each year. The district is to report on the submission of the immunization data. Immunization data is reported to ISBE by November 15th. And District 41 didn't meet this deadline, is in compliance with reporting requirements. The data is also available directly from ISBE. You can see there's a slight difference between the two. but we did fulfill our requirement. Those are my... That's it.
Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
Okay, board reports. Committee reports or other reports? Who wants to go first?
I'll go. I have... I went to the Churchill PTA meeting on November 12th. It was a well-attended meeting. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about fundraising and how they do a good job. I'm really impressed. I do want to say that the red card, I don't know if anybody knows what the red card is, but it's pretty impressive. It's a target card that it's a debit or a credit card. And if you spend it, and you then what you do is you get one, and then you log in your school. And then at the end of the day, at the end of all your spending all year long, for those people who logged in Churchill, they got $2,100 last year, which I think is pretty significant when you look at their budget. And that's pretty good. It's a great program, and people are out there looking for those programs to raise money. I think, you know, shows a lot of dedication on there. on their part. One thing we did, as the board member representative, there was a lot of discussion around the new 16 classrooms. It was good discussion, a lot of good questions. One thing I do want to point out, a request, they heard us talking about trying to balance the sites and moving dirt around from one site to the other and so forth and so on. And they really asked that we do not stockpile our dirt on Churchill so that it becomes a place for nice snow sleds and all the rest. So that was one request that was made, and I think it does make sense. Anyway, so I just bring that to the board.
Yeah. Sounds fun, though. As a boy who used to like to play on those hills.
Yeah, you got to go out to Newton.
Okay.
Those hills are fun.
I know.
Yeah.
So, but it was a good meeting.
Okay. I attended Lincoln's PTA meeting on the 14th. It was at 9:15 in the morning. It was very well attended. Mrs. Schweikwaffer gave a principal's report, continuing to look at the changes this year around drop-off and pick-off. It's starting to calm down, but you know, when Ron brought that up tonight, it made me think about all the schools, but in particular Lincoln, that is really kind of stuck in terms of its location. So again, kudos to Sarah Michael, who's done a really nice job with the safety committee there and working on that. Follow-up on some questions around parent volunteers, and then she also mentioned that on Halloween, which is raining, right, and all the parades happening inside, they had between 140 and 160 parent volunteers in the school along with all the kids. But there was a parent there who said, you know, even though we were all crazy, my child said to me, well, Mrs. Schweikoffer has a plan, don't worry about it. So I guess it all went off without a hitch, so that was good. The PTA, speaking about dollars, is the treasury report was around a surplus of dollars, and I know that's something that all of our PTA individual units work on, and that is not having more than X dollars through state PTA, actually some guidelines around that. And so they're looking into a teacher grant program, which I know Churchill already does, and Hadley already has some format. So there are a couple parents who immediately volunteered to look at that. So I'd like to report on that because I think that's a great that would be their first response. It's a great show of support from parents in terms of what's going on in the classrooms. And so they're going to work on that. Later that day was Team 21. And I'll just share a couple of talking points. There was an extensive discussion, oh, and thanks to Karen also and Kelly for getting our talking points out, on how and when we'll continue to gather feedback. We reviewed some initial feedback from Franklin, which was a good discussion. And then, you know, just the reality check in the room around this year being highly focused on evaluation in many different forms, and not, you know, some of the easier forms being kind of a plus-minus delta, so we can capture some quick anecdotal. We talked about the importance of communicating that evaluation and soliciting data from students who are key partners in this, and how the year is going for them. At parents, of course, faculty and staff, and then how those adjustments are being made to move this process into a second and third year. So some really good discussion on evaluation ties back into Patrick, what we were talking about earlier, as an ongoing process. GIA is involved with collecting some of that data, and right now Team 21, while collecting most of it, will turn over some of that responsibility to GIA so that building leadership teams can be a part of that, which is a great place for that to be. Many of us attended the IASB conference this weekend. Great discussion. I think probably one of the best keynotes this year was Tony Wagner, that we were all able to attend. And the only thing I want to point out about that, others might have some other comments, is that this just keeps resonating for us as a district, and that the speaker, Tony Wagner, who is a teacher, former teacher, high school teacher, educator, author, researcher around education, just finished a book, and one of his outcomes in terms of interviewing leaders in industry, not-for-profit, et cetera, were the 7 skills for survival, which I think as we were all sitting there, what we heard was learner characteristics. And so this is what his research found for you know, going into the workforce: critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, agility and adaptability, initiative and an entrepreneurial spirit, effective oral and written communication. Number one complaint about employers and college kids is they don't know how to write with voice, and the critical skill at that. Accessing and analyzing information. Do we need to be memorizing facts? Where do we spend our time in terms of helping kids learn to think critically? And then, bless you. And then courtesy and imagination, curiosity and imagination, most important skill in the 21st century. So I don't know about you guys thought about this, but I just left feeling like we keep hearing over and over this reminder of the work that the district is doing and the direction of long-range plan. So that was very cool. And then lastly, I was a delegate, although I'd like to pass this delegate pen down to Patrick because he will be doing it next year.
Yeah, we're going to pass the delegate.
That's a moment.
Pass the delegate pen.
Yeah.
I didn't spit on it. It's a clean one. I just took it out of the plastic. So at the delegate assembly, this is probably the shortest one ever. Sorry, Patrick. It was an hour, but really interesting. There was a consent agenda that was provided to the delegate assembly, and I think they did this last year too, Sam. And actually, our co-sponsored resolution was put on the consent agenda. Now, they do, like our board meetings, ask if anybody wants to remove any. So I was keeping my fingers crossed that it wouldn't be removed so we wouldn't have to speak to it. But it wasn't. It was a pass-through. There were three resolutions that were pulled, then discussed. But ultimately, the recommendations that I made in summary and that we all agreed with ended up being passed. Only one I think, well, they were all interesting, but the one on charter schools, which we talked a little bit about, was most widely debated in terms of discussion. And it was certainly something that we should be looking at because of the loss of dollars the way the legislation is written currently. So community unit District 50 in Woodland and 200 in Soft Valley will continue to move that forward and be keeping an eye on that. So Karen Fisher, who will be the new president of ISB, was elected along with Phil Pritzker, who is the vice president, by unanimous vote. And follow-up to that is I wrote to Kristen Fitzgerald, our co-sponsor from Naperville 203, and she and I are going to get together after Thanksgiving and talk about next steps. Peg Agnos, who's the executive director of LEND, and Sandra Pihos are on our list to meet with. And she got a response from Senator Mike Connolly, who wants to work with us on the resolution. And so we'll see if we can have a voice in legislation around this and really hopefully do some good work for mandates and you know, great concern around those all the time. So we'll see what happens. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else?
And I guess it was the 12th. I went to the Hadley PTA meeting. And that was right after we did the decluttering. So that was pretty much the topic of the evening. I will tell you that the PTA meeting felt that things had gone really well, and they were amazed at how much more space they have now that they've decluttered. So that was kind of a good thing. There were two other things that stood out at the meeting a lot besides that whole conversation. One was that they've been doing some activity nights where they're trying to get the kids to come back to school for some activity stuff. And the numbers are astounding, what's happening. It seems like it wasn't that long ago that there was only, you know, a very small number of students coming back, and now it's getting so large that I heard that the biggest problem they had was that they ran out of food. And some of the kids are like, you know, because it got so big. So that's a pretty healthy indicator, I think, that we're building a good community there when you have that many kids who want to come back to school. And the sixth graders come back separate from the seventh and eighth, but they sound like they loaded up both of them. And then the other thing was I got there a little bit early, and they were doing, I don't know if it's called speech team or forensics. Speech team. And heard a couple of the kids presenting, and I just have to tell you that these are some really talented kids. These, you know, they got up and did some improv and then also some recitation and some stuff, and very, very impressive. So I'd also echo what Ms. Nelson
Erica
said. No, I was going to use the Ms. Nelson, but what she said about going to the Triple I conference. This was the first time for three of us to go there. It is a very worthwhile forum. I know I got to go to some legislative sessions and other changes around procedures and things like that. A leadership one with Patrick, that was fantastic. And there were a lot of different sessions that we could pick from, but it's a really good use of time. It's a little bit exhausting. It takes a lot of hours, and but it's very, very worthwhile. So,
great. Thanks, Dean. Anybody else?
I attended the PTA Council this morning. Dave Scarmato and Dave Fulman, Bill Fulman from McConnell Police, came and did a presentation about it was a safety presentation, really talking about, you know, lockdowns and lockouts, and it was actually very informative. It was a good. It was interesting that a lot of it, the video was from Paul's district. So, nice work.
It's actually Paul's school.
Yeah. Okay.
Your old one.
It was old one. I have no connection to it, but it was.
the other thing that that they talked about with the Hadley about the need not to bring fabrics back into
that's a discussion.
I think Paul is about as animated as I've ever seen him. When someone suggests that, you know, we need to bring some of the cushions back in, and
what was that answer?
Absolutely not.
No need for parents to purchase that stuff for our teachers. We don't want it back in.
There was a similar conversation at the PTA.
No, we don't. That's not what we should be asking our parents to do.
No.
We had a finance committee meeting earlier today. We really kind of talked about two things. We went through the gaffer, we had a discussion and talked about kind of essentially our audit report, which is pretty comprehensive. And the good news is that yet again we had a very clean audit, which is always good. Always good. We only had one item that always kind of is listed, but the cost to fix that is not worth the benefit from fixing it. It's essentially that the audit raised the issue that we don't have someone on staff that could prepare the financial statements like the accountant. And based on the size of our district, it's really not cost effective to do that. I've talked to a number of other districts, and this auditor really, it's kind of their, it's the one kind of issue that they raised kind of universally with all the districts in the Illinois that they audit. And the only other thing, I was also with the Triple I conference, and Patrick and Erica, you know, I agree with the keynote speaker. The one thing that I did want to mention, it was very encouraging to me. You know, I went to the financial forum for veteran school board members about, you know, the kind of the financial review that PMA did, and I was there maybe 3 minutes early, and the place was packed, and I was standing room only, and it was very encouraging to see that everyone had taken such a keen interest on the financial aspects of the board. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Drew.
Sam, can I just pass out something? I only had a couple extra copies, but Paul had mentioned before that you had gone on the new online school report card.
Oh, yes,
that just went live. And so I went to that session, and I would encourage everybody to go on. The website's on there if you write it down. It's IllinoisReportCard.com, and they've completely rebuilt this to be very easy to navigate, user-friendly, some great metrics, and this is an elementary school example. Some of the language is a little more high school, but they just to show you what's on there. And so I pulled up Churchill on my phone while I was sitting in the session, and looked at our other schools, and it really is easy to navigate. And I wondered, Mike, there was a guy in there in the session, and he talked about what his district did, which was to take the URL for the school that's embedded in the Illinois report card and put that right on our website, because you can still navigate to see other schools, you know, examples, but then it would allow our parents and community to go right to our report cards.
Sure.
So I think that'd be pretty easy to do for us as well. So just a really good tool, and it did, you know, a whole navigation on the smart board for us. So cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Good for the community, really good for the community and for parents especially. So.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else?
Just one comment, and I'll touch base with Paul and Bob. I went to one of the breakout sessions, and it was on analytics. Kind of like that stuff. There's some things that I think would be good from an administrative perspective of Frontier 5 as an analytics program.
Yeah,
I think would be very helpful for us. I was very impressed with some of the data that was coming out of that interactive. So
we have access to that. It's a brand new.
I'd like to start seeing some of that.
Mm-hmm. It's brand new.
That's it.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick. Yes, Paul and Erica and I were remiss last meeting to mention that the three of us, attended the Lincoln Veterans Day program, and obviously it was a very touching, meaningful program for those kids. And I, on behalf of us, apologize for not mentioning that at the time. But and I also attended Thursday was a marathon day for me. I attended CIT Thursday, November 21st, and Paul presented the five essentials that Erica just mentioned, and we talked about the report that we heard tonight, as well as some other things, but. And I also attended the Ben Franklin PTA that same evening, and they talked about their Veterans Assembly, 20 veterans at their assembly, so obviously it was a very useful day for all our schools. They had a technology night, is what they called it, and what it was is they had Jeff Burke, who is the assistant principal over there, went through the Skyward Pinnacle Odyssey, the websites and everything, and the takeaway for me, because you know I'm here and I know what I know, and my kids use Odyssey all the time, but I did an informal poll of the parents that were in attendance, and every one of them has their kids use Odyssey in a minimum of what their teacher suggests, and most of them more. So that was encouraging to hear, given the fact that we as a board financed that program. And they did have their version of the ambassadors, their kids, who I think were level 3 kids, if I remember correctly, and they did a nice presentation, and it was very good. And I also attended the conference over the weekend and had some nice materials here that I will share with everyone, and I'm sure everyone will share theirs with each other as well. Okay, moving on. Upcoming meetings. December 9, 2013, public hearing on the 2013 proposed tax levy and Board of Education regular meeting, 7:15 p.m., Central Services Office. Board meeting will begin immediately following the public hearing. Other matters. Are there any other matters to consider by the board? Okay. Public participation. Is anyone here now who would like to address the board at this time? Okay. Hearing none. Closed session. The board has determined there's a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity, and also collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. May I have a motion to adjourn to close session?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Kenwood, second by Mr. Ellis. Roll call, please. Mrs. Stecker.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Korchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. The board will not be taking action when it returns to open session. Hang on.
Motion.
Okay, the time is 10:14, back in open session. We have a
motion
to adjourn the meeting. Mr.
Second.
Kenwood and Mr. Pachinski, all in favor?
Aye. Second.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?